Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and Susan Shand. Dr. Jill Robbins is here with another edition of Ask a Teacher. And we speak with VOA film reporter Penelope Pulu about this weekend's Academy Awards. We close our program with another American story. This week, it is part one of Hearts and Crosses by O. Henry. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
America's General Motors, or GM, is bringing back its Hummer truck. The new truck will be different from earlier versions of the Hummer. This time, it will be fully electric. The automaker announced last week it plans to begin selling the battery-powered vehicle called the Hummer EV in September of 2021. The new Hummer appeared in a television advertisement during the Super Bowl game last Sunday. However, only a small part of the front of the truck was shown. The ad attempted to show the contrasting nature of the vehicle, that it is a large, powerful truck, yet operates in complete silence. GM says it will introduce the truck to the public on May 20th. So far, the company has provided few details about it. The Hummer EV's battery will give the truck about 1,000 horsepower, GM said on its website. The vehicle can go from 0 to 97 kilometers per hour in 3 seconds. The automaker did not name a selling price or say how far the truck can go on a single battery charge. A GM spokeswoman told the Associated Press the new truck will have some design elements similar to the old one, but will not look like the Hummer of the past. The first Hummer, launched in the 1990s, was modeled after the Humvee vehicle used by United States military forces. The vehicle became popular in the early 2000s with lovers of large trucks and sport utility vehicles, or SUVs. Many Americans liked its off-road abilities. But GM dropped the Hummer in 2010 after experiencing financial difficulties. Sales suffered big drops after fuel prices rose in the summer of 2008. Environmental groups criticized the non-fuel efficient vehicles for wasting energy resources. GM said the new Hummer would be built at one of its Michigan factories that was set to close. The company said it was investing $2.2 billion to modernize the Detroit area plant to produce new electric trucks and SUVs. Several other car makers, including Ford and Tesla, are also planning to launch battery-powered trucks and SUVs in the future. I'm Brian Lynn.
Community groups, political parties, and the government in Cameroon have been appealing to women to vote in elections on Sunday. They are telling the women not to fear threats made by separatist groups. The separatists claim they will stop the local and parliamentary elections. Female candidates and women who campaigned for other candidates fear their efforts may lead to nothing at all if women do not come out to vote. Representatives of non-governmental organizations and government ministries joined political parties at campaign events in the capital city, Yaoundé. They say they did this as part of a special campaign for women to perform their civic duties. Alvin Yinda is a candidate of the Cameroon People Democratic Movement. She told VOA she likes the appeal to women because if they fail to vote on election day, men hold an unfair advantage. Yinda said that her party's female candidates decided to urge all women who are registered to come out to vote on February 9th. She says they are working with all the political parties to make sure women take part in the decision-making process. Muma B. Ivan is national coordinator of the non-governmental organization Cameroon Women's Peace Movement. She says its goal is for women to support lists that have a majority of female candidates. Women have a different way of looking at governance, but if we are not there to influence policies, how do we get that level playing ground that we, women, are looking for? She asked. The president of Cameroon, Paul Biya, called the elections last November. Before then, groups of women led by the NGO More Women in Politics visited towns and villages asking women to compete for political office. Traditionally, many women do not vote because their husband or their communities limit their participation. Some women fail to vote because they are unable to read or write. This year, some observers fear the number of female voters will decrease because of a separatist conflict in Cameroon's northwest and southwest. Armed groups are fighting to separate English-speaking areas from the French-speaking majority country. At least 3,000 have died in the fighting. Most voters in the Northwest and Southwest have moved to safer areas. The Election Commission says it has taken special measures to make sure they can vote on Sunday. I'm Susan Shand.
Actors, directors, producers, and other movie industry stars will gather Sunday in Los Angeles, California, for the yearly Academy Awards. Winning an Academy Award, or Oscar, can push forward a career like almost nothing else. Ahead of this year's Oscars, VOA film reporter Penelope Pulu spoke with Learning English about some of the standout movies and nominees. She first shared her thoughts about two of the films nominated for Best Picture, The Irishman, directed by Martin Scorsese, and Marriage Story.
I have some questions about the editing of the film. I have some reservations, but we should not discount the fact that Scorsese is an icon and that this may be his swan song. Marriage Story is a wonderful theater drama more than actual movie. Beautiful character drama, wonderfully played, definitely leaves you with a lot to chew on.
Pulu also praised the Korean film Parasite, also nominated for Best Picture. But what are its chances of taking home the night's biggest award?
It has a great chance. However, as good as Parasite is, it may not strike a chord with American audiences because there are cultural gray areas of that film that Americans may not quite understand.
Pulu predicts the World War I film 1917 will win the Best Picture Oscar.
First of all, it is a remarkable film cinematically, and it is very well done, very emotional, very gripping, and revives the First World War.
Joaquin Phoenix is nominated for Best Actor for his role in the film Joker.
I would be tempted to give the Oscar to Phoenix. I believe he is a cut above, not so much because his acting was better technically, but because the character was such that leaves you with a lot to deal with.
Pulu also had strong praise for Adam Driver, nominated for Best Actor for his work in Marriage Story.
Driver's role, as powerful as it was, because it's so subtle, I'm not so sure how many people are going to be captivated by that.
Cynthia Erivo and Scarlett Johansson are among the nominees for Best Actress. Erivo plays the American abolitionist and former slave Harriet Tubman in the movie Harriet. Johansson is nominated for her work alongside Driver in Marriage Story.
Many times, whenever somebody has played a slave, a civil rights activist, somebody greater than life, an iconic real person, we have seen that person win. So for that, I have to say that Cynthia Erivo in Harriet, she could get it.
Johansson is also nominated for Best Supporting Actress for her work in Jojo Rabbit. But Pulu favors actress Laura Dern to win in this category. She played a divorce lawyer in Marriage Story. As for Best Supporting Actor?
In the Supporting Actor category, I believe and I'm hoping, although we have some serious actors there, Hanks, Hopkins, Pacino, Pesci, and Pitt, I do have to say Tom Hanks did an incredible job in It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood as Mr. Rogers. I'm hoping to see him up there receiving an Oscar.
Many people want to sound more like native English speakers, so they send questions about pronunciation to us here at VOA Learning English. We often get asked, how can I improve my English pronunciation? Today, we will look at two simple things you can do to improve your pronunciation. The first is to speak loudly enough. Many people learning a foreign language worry about having an accent or saying words differently because of their mother tongue. Yet, there are plenty of people who have learned English as a second or even third language. Take, for example, Hollywood actors Antonio Banderas and Jackie Chan. The two are non-native English speakers. Banderas has a Spanish accent, while Chan has a Chinese accent. But both men are easy to understand, partly because they speak loudly and clearly. When speaking, the goal should be communicating to be easily understood, not removing your accent, which is often hard to do. The second thing you can do to improve pronunciation is to listen for patterns. English sentences have a rhythm. In other words, you will find a kind of systematic arrangement or order to the words and expressions. When you listen to someone speaking English, try humming along with the rhythm of their sentences. Think of yourself making sounds like that of an insect. Here is an example. What are you doing in there? Here's what it sounds like to hum this sentence. It is easy to make sounds while keeping your mouth closed. Some English learners like to listen to music and sing songs. These exercises will help you to learn the rhythms of the language. Next time, we will talk about some more things you can do to improve your pronunciation. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Hearts and Crosses. Baldy Woods reached for a drink and got it. When Baldy wanted something, he usually got it. But this is not Baldy's story. Now he took his third drink, which was larger than the first and the second. Baldy had been listening to the troubles of a friend. Now Baldy was going to tell his friend what to do. So the friend was buying him the drinks. This was the right thing for the friend to do. "I'd be king if I were you," said Baldy. He said it loudly and strongly. Webb Yeager moved his wide hat back on his head. He put his fingers in his yellow hair and moved it about. It now looked wilder than before. But this did not help him to think better. Therefore, he also got another drink.
"If a man marries a queen, it ought not make him nothing," said Webb. Here was his real problem.
"Surely not," said Baldy. "You ought to be a king, but you're only the queen's husband. That's what happens to a man in Europe if he marries the king's daughter. His wife becomes a queen, but is he a king? No. His only duty is to appear with the queen in pictures and be the father of the next king. That's not right. Yes, Webb, you are only the queen's husband. And if I were you, I'd turn everything upside down and I would be king."
Baldy finished his drink.
"Baldy," said Webb, "you and I have been cowboys together for years. We've been riding the same road since we were very young. I wouldn't talk about my family to anyone but you. You were working on the Nopalito Ranch when I married Santa McAllister. I was foreman then. What am I now? Nothing."
"Well, when old McAllister was cattle king of West Texas," continued Baldy, "you were important. You told people what to do. Your commands were as strong as his."
"That was true," said Webb, "until he discovered that I wanted to marry Santa. Then he sent me as far away from the ranch house as he could. When the old man died, they started to call Santa the cattle queen. Now, I tell the cattle what to do. That's all. She takes care of all the business. She takes care of all the money. I can't sell any cattle, not one animal. Santa is the queen and I'm nothing."
"I would be king if I were you," said Baldy Woods again. "When a man marries a queen, he ought to be the same as she is. Plenty of people think it's strange, Webb. Your words mean nothing on the Nopalito Ranch. Mrs. Yeager is a fine little lady, but a man ought to be the head of his own house."
Webb's brown face grew long with sadness. With that expression in his wild yellow hair and his blue eyes, he looked like a schoolboy who had lost his leadership to another strong boy. yet his tall body looked too strong for such a thing to happen to him.
"I'm riding back to the ranch today," he said. It was easy to see that he did not want to go. "I have to start some cattle on the road to San Antonio tomorrow morning."
"Well, I'll go with you as far as Dry Lake," said Baldy.
The two friends got on their horses and left the little town where they had met that morning. At Dry Lake, they stopped to say goodbye. They had been riding for miles without talking. But in Texas, talk does not often continue steadily. Many things may happen between words. But when you begin to talk again, you're still talking about the same thing. So now Webb added something to the talk that began 10 miles away.
"You remember, Baldy, there was a time when Santa was different. You remember the days when old McAllister kept me away from the ranch house. Remember how she would send me a sign that she wanted to see me? Old McAllister said that he would kill me if I came near enough. You remember the sign she used to send, Baldy? The picture of a heart with a cross inside it?"
"Me?" cried Baldy. "Sure, I remember. Every cowboy on the ranch knew that sign of the heart and the cross. We would see it on things sent out from the ranch. We would see it on anything. It would be on newspapers, on boxes of food. Once I saw it on the back of the shirt of a cook that McAllister sent from the ranch."
"Santa's father made a promise that she wouldn't write to me or send me any word. That heart and cross sign was her plan. When she wanted to see me, she would put that mark on something that she knew I would see. And when I saw it, I traveled fast to the ranch that same night. I would meet her outside the house."
"Well, we all knew it," said Baldy. "But we never said anything. We wanted you to marry Santa. We knew why you had that fast horse. When we saw the heart and the cross on something from the ranch, we always knew your horse was going to go fast that night."
"The last time Santa sent me the sign," said Webb, "was when she was sick. When I saw it, I got on my horse and started. It was a 40-mile ride. She wasn't at our meeting place. I went to the house. Old McAllister met me at the door.
'Did you come here to get killed?' he said. 'I won't kill you this time. I was going to send for you. Santa wants you. Go in that room and see her. Then come out here and see me.'"
Santa was lying in bed very sick, but she smiled and put a hand in mine, and I sat down by the bed, mud and riding clothes and all.
"I could hear you coming for hours, Webb," she said. "I was sure you would come. You saw the sign?"
"I saw it," I said.
"It's our sign," she said. "Hearts and crosses, to love and to suffer. That's what they mean."
And old Dr. Musgrove was there. And Santa goes to sleep, and Dr. Musgrove touches her face, and he says to me,
"You were good for her, but go away now. The little lady will be all right in the morning."
Old McAllister was outside her room. "She's sleeping," I said. "Now you can start killing me. You have plenty of time. I haven't anything to fight with." Old McAllister laughs and says to me,
"Killing the best foreman in West Texas is not good business. I don't know where I could get another good foreman. I don't want you in the family, but I can use you on the Nopalito if you stay away from the ranch house. You go up and sleep, and then we'll talk."
The two men prepared to separate. They took each other's hand.
"Bye, Baldy," said Webb. "I'm glad I saw you and had this talk."
With a sudden rush, the two riders were on their way. Then Baldy pulled his horse to a stop and shouted. Webb turned.
"If I were you,"
came Baldy's loud voice,
"I would be king."
At 8 the following morning, Bud Turner got off his horse at the Nopalito Ranch House. Bud was the cowboy who was taking the cattle to San Antonio. Mrs. Yeager was outside the house putting water on some flowers. In many ways, Santa was like her father, King McAllister. She was sure about everything, she was afraid of nothing. She was proud. But Santa looked like her mother. She had a strong body and a soft prettiness. Because she was a woman, her manners were womanly. But she liked to be queen, as her father had liked to be king. Webb stood near her, giving orders to two or three cowboys. "Good morning," said Bud. "Where do you want the cattle to go? To Barber's, as usual?" The queen always answered such a question. All the business, buying, selling, and banking, had been held in her hands. Care of the cattle was given to her husband. When King McAllister was alive, Santa was his secretary and his helper. She had continued her work, and her work had been successful. But before she could answer, the queen's husband spoke.
"You drive those cattle to Zimmerman's and Nesbitt's. I spoke to Zimmerman about it."
Bud turned, ready to go.
"Wait," called Santa quickly.
She looked at her husband with surprise in her gray eyes.
"What do you mean, Webb?"
she asked.
"I never deal with Zimmerman and Nesbitt. Barber has bought all the cattle from this ranch for 5 years. I'm not going to change."
She said to Bud Turner,
"Take those cattle to Barber."
Bud did not look at either of them. He stood there waiting.
"I want those cattle to go to Zimmerman and Nesbitt," said Webb.
There was a cold light in his blue eyes.
"It's time to start," said Santa to Bud. "Tell Barber we'll have more cattle ready in about a month."
Bud allowed his eyes to turn and meet Webb's.
"You take those cattle," said Webb,
"to Barber,"
said Santa quickly.
"Let's say no more about it. What are you waiting for, Bud?"
"Nothing," said Bud. But he did not hurry to move away, for man is man's friend, and he did not like what had happened.
"You heard what she said," cried Webb. "We do what she commands."
He took off his hat and made a wide movement with it, touching the floor.
"Webb," said Santa, "what's wrong with you today?"
"I'm acting like the queen's fool," said Webb. "What can you expect? Let me tell you, I was a man before I married a cattle queen. What am I now? Something for the cowboys to laugh at. But I'm going to be a man again."
Santa looked at him.
"Be reasonable, Webb," she said quietly. "There's nothing wrong. You take care of the cattle, I take care of the business. You understand the cattle. I understand the business better than you do. I learned it from my father."
"I don't like kings and queens," said Webb, "unless I'm one of them myself." "All right, it's your ranch. Barber gets the cattle."
Webb's horse was tied near the house. He walked into the house and brought out the supplies he took on long rides. These he began to tie on his horse. Santa followed him. Her face had lost some of its color. Webb got on his horse. There was no expression on his face except a strange light burning in his eyes.
"There's some cattle at the Hondo Waterhole," he said. "They ought to be moved. Wild animals have killed three of them. I did not remember to tell Sims to do it. You tell him."
Santa put a hand on the horse and looked her husband in the eye.
"Are you going to leave me, Webb?"
she asked quietly.
"I'm going to be a man again," he answered.
"I wish you success,"
she said with a sudden coldness. She turned and walked into the house. Webb Yeager went to the southeast as straight as he could ride. And when he came to the place where the sky and the earth seemed to meet, he was gone. Those at the Nopalito knew nothing more about him. Days passed, then weeks, then months. But Webb Yeager did not return.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.